Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. It's your future. Let Zurich help you protect it. Talk to us today about life and serious illness cover.
We've been covering on this show, huge efforts are underway in Gaza to ensure that every child under 10 receives a polio vaccine. This huge and dangerous undertaking in war-torn Gaza aims to vaccinate 640,000 children. In a few minutes, I'll be joined by Fran Brennan, who's CEO of Polio Survivors Ireland, about the impact this disease can have. But first, I've been speaking with Adele Coder, UNICEF's Regional Director for the Middle East and North Africa. And I first asked her for an update on the vaccine programme.
Of course, is one of the diseases that are preventable and that the world has really managed to eradicate from many places in the world except, you know, Afghanistan and Pakistan. And Gaza, before the war, had quite high levels of childhood vaccination for children, including, of course, for polio. So this is really something very new that came as a result of the unfortunate war situation, the fact that children were not getting their vaccines on time, and also the deteriorating sanitation conditions, which also contribute to the propagation of polio. So it cripples the child. It's a disease for life that cannot be treated, but that is preventable through vaccination. This is why it's really tragic to see it coming back to Gaza. And this is why we had to do the vaccination to prevent further cases from happening.
The first phase of vaccination is now done. Is it? How extensive was the operation? How well did it go?
We have to say that the polio vaccination campaign in Gaza is probably one of the most difficult campaigns that was ever done because of the high insecurity situation under which the campaign is happening. There has been negotiation for every day to have 8 hours of a humanitarian pause for the parents to be able to bring their children to the fixed health sites where the vaccination was happening, and also for some mobile health teams to go into houses and to some areas to be able to reach all the children. Because for the vaccination campaign to be successful, we have to be able to say that we have reached 90% of the children, 90. And the target number of children is 640,000 children for the three phases of the campaign. Because you know that phase one was in the central area. Phase two, which started yesterday, was in the southern area. And phase three will be in the north of Wadi Gaza, so in the northern area.
So I think in phase one, the target was 189,000 children or so. Was that achieved? And what is the target for phase two?
Yeah, so we reached 187,000 on phase one. And on day one of phase two, we reached 161,000.
How long will that take?
Well, of course, today phase two is continuing. And the target is to cover 343,000 children in phase two. So, and it will be, of course, in south of Deir el-Balah, in Khan Yunis, and in Rafah al-Mawasi.
Are you confident that the pauses, the humanitarian pauses in violence, will hold in order for phase two and three to take place?
So far, it has been holding, and it's a glimpse of success, really, the campaign, in the middle of all these difficult conditions not only difficult, tragic conditions that Gaza has been through. And we hope that it will continue like this until the end. Of course, we have challenges. We had challenges all the time. We think about the security of the teams and the security of the parents, because without security, it is impossible to do the campaign. So far, it has been good. There has been no incident of security, and you know, the efforts of everyone are appreciated. We also faced some challenges in the sense that roads and infrastructure were destroyed, which made sometimes the trip of the parents to the health center or the work of the mobile teams into all areas difficult. And we also had difficulties in terms of the cold chain capacity, you know, because the vaccines have to be preserved at a certain temperature. And when we did the assessment, we found that we had only 25% of the cold chain that remained in Gaza. So we overcome this by bringing in more cold chain equipment, including ice boxes, ice packs, cold boxes, and we have been able to maintain the polio vaccines under the temperature that they deserve.
Well, that is really good news, and the wider cooperation to get this done is understandable as well, because if polio is in Gaza and if it's not curtailed or vaccinated against, it can spread really quickly, can't it, right into Israel, Lebanon and the West Bank.
Absolutely. And this is why we are really keen to make sure that we reach at least this 90%, because the danger is not for the children only, or the risk is not only for the children only who live in Gaza. You so rightly said that it can go to the neighboring places. And it will really be a pity, because the region, or that part of the region, had done really very well in terms of addressing polio. So we need to make sure that the vaccination campaign, this first round, because of course there will be a second round sometime towards the end of September. So we really hope that this will be a good example, and that also it will serve to establish a little bit of a sense of normalcy in the lives of people, because when they find that there is a campaign for prevention of something and not only for direct humanitarian and life-saving assistance, you know, then it gives people a little bit of hope. And I sincerely hope that this hope will continue and reach maybe other areas.
Well, the tiniest,
other sectors.
You're right, the tiniest ray of hope amid months and months of death and destruction at this point. Can I ask you finally about how bad the humanitarian situation is at the moment? What is your latest understanding of it?
Well, I think for me, I think the biggest gift that we can give to children, of course, is a ceasefire. And that's the biggest vaccination that we can give them. And we certainly hope that there will be a ceasefire. But we also are seeing a little bit that it's sort of becoming the new normal. I think this is our biggest fear, that the situation of having everyday casualties and everyday bombing becomes the new normal in Gaza. And that's the scary part for us.
And it can't continue. Let's hope there is a ceasefire. And let's hope phase two and three of the vaccination program against polio goes very well. We'll talk again soon. The very best of luck to you and your team with it.
Thank
UNICEF
you so
Regional
much.
Director
thank
for the Middle East and North Africa, Adele Coder. Thank you. Thank you very much. Indeed. I'm joined now by Fran Brennan, who's CEO of Polio Survivors Ireland, listening to Adele Coder there. Fran, you're very welcome to the programme. So polio in Gaza for the first time in 25 years, and we know that a 10 or 11 month old child is now paralysed in the leg. But there's a legacy of polio outbreak in Ireland as well, isn't there?
Yeah, there very much is, Cormac. We estimate somewhere between 5,000 and 7,000 people are living in Ireland with the effects of polio. Polio was eradicated through vaccination, and we've just been hearing about the vaccination program in Gaza. There was a very successful vaccination program in Ireland in the early 1960s. Mm-hmm. So for somebody like me, I was lucky to be born at the end of 62. I was vaccinated automatically as part of that program. But that only really kicked in 60-61. So many of the members of Polio Survivors Ireland are that last generation of people who contracted polio before the vaccination was widely available. And I guess there must be a bittersweet element to that. You know, an awful lot of them must feel, well, if we were born 2 years later, say,
what might have been.
What might have been.
And so you are the CEO of Polio Survivors Ireland. 7,000 members, you say, or 7,000 people affected?
No one knows for sure.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the records weren't great. the estimates for Ireland are derived from looking at the figures for the UK and the United States and extrapolating, probably closer to 5,000 now. Sadly, the average age of our members is mid-70s.
Okay.
So people are passing away.
The last major outbreak of polio here was in the 50s, is that right?
Yeah, there was a very serious outbreak in 1956 in Cork. But I think it's important to say there was always a certain underlying level of polio anyway. So we have members who contracted polio right up to the early 60s. And then at that point with the vaccination program, the numbers fell off a cliff. Mm-hmm. We have literally a handful of Irish-born members who contracted it after that date. But of course, we now have an important cohort of our membership is actually people born abroad who've moved to Ireland in recent years and have been affected by polio.
What are the needs then, as an association, as a group, what are the needs of these people?
For the Irish-born polio survivors, what happened to many of them was they recovered from the initial polio outbreak in many respects, or infection. They got a good deal of hospitalisation here and treatment there. Some would say they spent too many years in hospital, quite frankly, and that had psychological and other implications for disrupted education and so forth. Mm-hmm. But they did get good treatment in terms of rehabilitation. So many Irish polio survivors were able to walk with the aid of a caliper or leg brace, effectively, and a walking stick. Problem is, when they got to their 50s and early 60s, a condition known as post-polio syndrome kicked in. And it's really a sort of a later effects of polio where essentially the neurons start wearing out. So the repair that the body did to itself in terms of recovering from the original polio infection starts to break down with age and with wear and tear. And you can appreciate that if somebody had a polio-affected leg, the good leg is compensating for that all the time. Well, after 30 or 40 years, that good leg will deteriorate as well. Mm. So for many of those polio survivors, they were able to walk around to an extent with the aid of a caliper and a crutch.
But it was, and this might be astounding for people listening who might have heard about polio in reference, in maybe reading in the years or a history book or whatever the case may be. But you're describing lifelong impact there.
Yeah. Absolutely. And as they get older, many of those polio survivors need wheelchairs. So people who were able to walk around to a limited extent, by the time they get to 60 years of age, many of them need wheelchairs. Mm-hmm. And we've had to provide things like wheelchairs, mobility scooters and other supports to help people live independently at home who otherwise might not be able to do so.
You mentioned new members that you have and that may have come from other countries. Would they not have had access to a polio vaccine, or how does that come about?
I suppose vaccinations were extended worldwide gradually from the 1960s onwards. But from much of the world, I mean, I think I saw a figure that in 1988, there were still 350,000 polio infections worldwide at that stage. So it wasn't eliminated in places like Asia and Africa until much more recently. So, yeah, we would have a cohort, maybe around 70 to 80 polio survivor members from other countries who would tend to be more severely disabled in many cases than their typical Irish counterparts because they didn't have access to the healthcare system that we would have had.
Mm-hmm. I think you've given us a great description as to why, an explainer as to why the impact, first of all, on your members here, but also in relation to Gaza, why it's absolutely crucial that this vaccination program is done quickly and effectively. Fran Brennan, CEO of Polio Survivors Ireland, thank you very much indeed for joining us.